Lochan her Shriman. So his eyes are very beautiful. Lochan her Shriman. He is respected by the goddess of fortune. Rajiv Lochan her Shriman. Rajendra Ragupungavaha. So let us recite this prayer. Shri Rama Rama Bhadrascha, Rama Rama Bhadrascha, Rama Chandrascha Shashvataha, Rama Chandrascha Shashvataha, Rajiva Lochana Shriman, Rajiva Lochana Shriman, Raghavendra Raghupun, Raghavendra Raghupungavaha, Shri Rama Rama Bhadrascha, Rama Chandrascha Shashvataha, Rajiva Lochana Shriman, Raghavendra Raghupungavaha, Shri Rama Rama Bhadrascha, Ramachandrascha Shashvataha, Rajiva Lochana Shriman, Raghavendra Raghupungavaha. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padkamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Itinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So I welcome you to this last day session today in our 3-day Ramkatha. So in the first day we discussed about the two brothers, Sugriva and Vali, and how judgment without understanding made the best of friends into the worst of enemies. Then yesterday we discussed about the three brothers, Vibhishan, Kumbhakarna and Ravana. And we discussed about the ethical crisis and the moral crisis. So Ravana's moral crisis was caused, or moral lapse was caused by Shurpanka's instigation. And we discussed how Vibhishan sacrificed worldly morality for Krishna's sake. Whereas Kumbhakarna made the mistake of sacrificing Krishna for worldly morality. And we concluded by discussing how the vertical relationship and the horizontal relationship. So just taking care of our horizontal relationships does not make us spiritual, because even the animals do that. So we have to harmonize our worldly relationships in such a way that they help us and our dependents, our relatives, to develop their love for Krishna. Then they become spiritualized. So today we will discuss about a third aspect, emotions. We discussed first day about relationships, Second day we discussed about decisions, and third day we'll discuss about emotions. So we know that when Lord Ram was exiled, Bharat came there to get Lord Ram back. And when Lakshman saw that Bharat is coming with the whole army, he was infuriated. He said, "This Bharat is so wicked. He wants to kill you, but he doesn't know that I am there. And I will send him to the abode of death." So at that time, Lord Ram was very calm. And he said, "You know, if Bharat has ever offended you, Lakshman, then it behooves you to punish him in some way. But one brother should never talk about killing another brother. If you desire the kingdom, if you find the austerity of living in the forest too much, then I will tell Bharat and Bharat will stay in the forest in your place and you can go and rule." Now Lakshman had no intention like this. So Lakshman was completely crushed by this. And then Lord Ram said, "You know how much Bharat loves me. In fact, Bharat's love for me is no less than your love for me. And I am sure that Bharat has come here just for the purpose of beseeching me to come back to the kingdom. He is coming to the forest as our guest, and you want to greet him with arrows?" So Lakshman was completely silenced by that. And then after the whole incident took place, we'll discuss about that a little later in the class. But then Lakshman says, "Ram, why is it that I always get angry like this?" You know, Lakshman is a little impulsive person. So Lord Ram says, "You are a bhavuk person. You are a sentimental person. You are an emotional person." So then Lakshman asks this question: "Is it bad to be emotional? Is it bad to be sentimental?" So Lord Ram says, "No." He says, "Emotions are not at all bad. Emotions are beautiful. Emotions are what make life worth living. But our emotions should inspire us towards dharma and not away from dharma." So this is going to be the theme of our discussion today. You know, emotions are essential and beautiful in life. But our emotions should elevate us and not degrade us. So how we can do that, and how the Ramayana provides us both the example and the inspiration for this, we will discuss. In our modern society, we see emotional chaos practically everywhere. You know, people at a gross level, emotional chaos is expressed through violence. When people get angry over trifles, and they have fights within, there are domestic wars and there are global wars. All of them are ultimately because of inability to manage emotions. And over small things, anger is just one of the emotions we are talking about here, but over small things, people just grow wild. And there's a American psychologist who's written a book called Emotional Intelligence. And there he says that what we are experiencing in society today is emotional hijacking of people's lives. Like a plane is hijacked by certain terrorists or hijackers. So that means the plane is supposed to go in one direction, but the hijackers take it off in another direction. So similarly, you know, we plan to do things in a particular way, and suddenly while doing that particular activity, we experience certain emotion. And the emotion drags us in an entirely different direction. One emotion might be anger, another might be lust, another might be greed. So, in one sense, these emotions, if you look at the crimes in the world, you know, most of the crimes can be traced down to uncontrolled emotions. Krishna says there are three gates to hell: lust, anger, and greed. So, these three gates lead to hell. Not only to hell in the next world, but they create hell in this world. If you look at the crimes, all the crimes can be basically categorized into three categories. One is sexual violations, second is corruption related crimes, and the third is violence, murder and mercenary killings. So all the sexual crimes originate from lust. All the corruption and all those crimes originate from greed. And all the violence and destruction originates from anger. So basically, lust, anger, and greed are the cause of practically most of the world's suffering. So at an administrative level, we need to have better law enforcement, we need to have stronger police surveillance and all those things. But that doesn't solve the problem. That only checks the problem temporarily. But if you want to solve it, we have to equip people with tools to better manage their emotions. So actually the emotions which are created by lust, anger, greed, these are not our real emotions. These are our virtual emotions. In Sanskrit, there are two words. There is bhavana and there is vasana. So bhavana is actually what is deeper. Vasana is something superficial. So, you know what? The male-female attraction that is shown on in the media, that they call it love. Love is a bhavana, whereas lust is a vasana. So what they call as love in the media is actually lust. So what is the difference between a bhavana and a vasana? You know, people want to be happy. Now, one symptom of happiness is laughter. But laughter is just the external result of happiness. Laughter itself is not happiness. You know, if laughter itself were happiness, then when we tickle a child, the child starts laughing. Now, can we say the child is happy? Well, you can call it some kind of happiness, but that is not real happiness. If that were real happiness, then we could just manufacture a perpetual tickling machine and just keep tickling ourselves and we'll be happy throughout our lives. No, that is not happiness. So, we understand that tickling creates laughter because there is a physical mechanism over there, the biochemical mechanism inside the body. But we understand. Hare Krishna, yeah. So, we understand that even if there is laughter resulting from tickling, that is not real happiness. That is a shadow of happiness. So, the whatever stimuli and response is created by lust is superficial, like the laughter resulting from tickling. So, that's a vasana. It's superficial. It doesn't touch the soul at all. And it touches the mind also in a very superficial, external way. Whereas emotions originate from the deepest core of our beings. So in modern times, people mistake vasanas to be bhavanas. And because of this, you know, people live very superficial, artificial lives. And that's why if you see the entertainment, it's actually, entertainment is basically second-hand enjoyment. Then somebody else is dancing in a movie, somebody else is caressing and embracing. And we think, if I were there in that person position, it would be so nice. So it's basically second-hand enjoyment. And the very fact that such second-hand enjoyment is so popular indicates that people desperately want emotional fulfillment, which they want in any way. So actually, emotions are very core and essential to our beings. But people don't know how to express emotions, how to reciprocate emotions. So what we are experiencing today in society is emotional hijacking. And all of us have experience of this. Sometime or other, it may be anger, it may be lust, it may be something so simple as boredom, which just doesn't allow us to do our work. So now the scriptures have a plan for how our emotions can be lifted and take us towards dharma. So the first step is connect material emotions with God. That is called the Karmakanda section, where people have natural material emotions. They want children, they want wealth, they want spouse. So for doing all this, you worship God. And if people worship God for that purpose also, and they get the result, then they experience the material joy, but along with that, they experience some gratitude to God. And that material joy is material, but the gratitude for God is a deeper emotion. So that is there in the Vedic literature, in the Rig Veda, Sam Veda, these Vedic Samhitas. They mostly contain descriptions of what we need to do to fulfill specific desires. But ultimately, these emotions are disappointing because all material things are temporary and they will be taken away from us. And to the extent we experience happiness in relationship with some material object or in a relationship with some material personality, the personality is spiritual, but our relationship with that person may be material, then to the extent we experience pleasure, to that extent we will experience pain when that relationship is severed. Therefore, the Upanishads offer the next section where they focus heavily on renunciation. See, all the emotions of this world are false. And the more we become emotional, the more we become entangled. Therefore, give up all these emotions. And this is the version of spirituality that most people think of when they think if somebody starts becoming serious about spiritual life, they think he's going to renounce everything. He's going to give up everything. But that is only a transitional stage in spirituality where we become detached from material emotions. And it is important to be detached from material emotions. But that doesn't satisfy the heart. That only saves the heart from suffering. So Srila Prabhupada gives the example that if somebody has a terrible disease in the body, Srila Prabhupada gives one example. The example he gives is that if somebody has been sick with a major disease like tuberculosis, and at that time when the disease is gone, but the health has not come back, that is called recuperation. So there are sanctuaries also where people recuperate. So that is neither sick nor healthy. So having no emotions is like that. That is neither sick nor healthy stage. But beyond that, there is the state of positive health that is described. And this we see especially in the Itihasas and the Puranas. The Itihasas and the Puranas talk about stories and emotions involved in those stories in relationship with the Supreme Lord. And those emotions elevate us. So, what the Ramayana especially is a scripture par excellence for demonstrating these spiritual emotions. So, we see these divine emotions in the relationships between Ram, Lakshman, Bharat and Shatrughna. And of course, the other associated personalities. So, we will focus on Ram, Lakshman and Bharat. So when Kaikeyi was misled by Mantara into asking Dashrath Maharaj for those two deadly boons, Dashrath Maharaj agreed. And actually that day, the announcement was made that next day, Lord Ram would be coronated as the Prince Regent. And then that night, Dashrath Maharaj, he had three main queens. Out of them, the senior most was Kaushalya. But his favorite, Kaikeyi, was especially beautiful and young. So she was his favorite. So he went to her palace to report to her the news. But she had already got the news from Mantara. And she was in her sulking chambers. And when Dashrath Maharaj heard that she is in sulking chambers, he was very distressed. And he went and asked her, what is the matter? This today's occasion for such great joy. She didn't speak anything. He said, what do you want? Whatever you want, I will fulfill that. Do you promise that? So Dashrath Maharaj was like a hunter being like an animal being lured towards the hunter playing his flute. No. Dashrath Maharaj is completely unsuspecting. He said, you are my most beloved queen. By the name of that Lord, that Ram, who is more dear to me than my life, I vow that I will fulfill whatever you want. By the name of that Ram, separation from whom will render my life null and void, I promise that I will do whatever you tell. By the name of that Lord Ram, for whose sake I will sacrifice my kingdom, my children, my spouse, and my own self, I promise that I will do what you say. So when he took those triple vow, Kaikai felt as if her purpose was just completed. And then Kaikai asked for those two terrible boons. Dashrath Maharaj was devastated. He couldn't believe that Kaikai could possibly ask for such a thing. And the whole night, Dashrath Maharaj was falling unconscious, coming back to consciousness and seeing Kaikai's stern, unrelenting face, again falling back to consciousness, falling at Kaikai's feet, begging to her, "If you want Bharat to be the king, I have no problem, but I cannot live without Ram." Now, the power of bad association was such that the Ramayana describes that Kaikai was gentle, kind, and wise. But by the association of Mantara, she became harsh, hard-hearted, and foolish. Exactly opposite. Gentle, kind, wise. She became harsh. So gentle and harsh refers to speech. And kind and hard-hearted refers to the heart. And wise and foolish refers to the intelligence. Completely her qualities became perverted. And she was not ready to listen. Actually, Mantara had coached her, practically speaking. He said that if Ram stays in the kingdom, then the citizens will not allow Bharat to be coronated. In fact, Bharat himself will be reluctant in the presence of his older brother to be coronated. So Ram should be banished for a time period long enough, not only for Bharat to be coronated, but to be stabilized as the king. That's why she said, not only one, but you have to get both benedictions from Dashrath. And then finally, through Sumantra, Lord Ram was summoned. And Ram was in Sita's chambers. And as Lord Ram was going, Sita told her, "You know, I long for the day. Today you'll be coronated as the prince regent, and I hope soon you'll be coronated as the king. And I wish to serve you in that capacity." And as she was going, she says, "I pray to the four Lokpalas, you know, Indra, Yamaraj, Varuna, and Kubera, that they always protect and shower their choices blessings on you." And Lord Ram went in his chariot to Dashrath's palace. And there outside he was accompanied by Lakshmi. And both of them went. And when he entered into Kaikai's chambers, he could see immediately Dashrath Maharaj's hair were disheveled. There were streaks of tears on his face. His eyes were red because he had not slept throughout the night. And he asked, "What is the matter, my dear father? What command can I follow?" Dashrath Maharaj did not reply anything. And she said, then he went up to Kaikai and he asked her, "What is the cause of the distress of my father?" So Kaikai replied, "You are the cause." See how the intelligence gets perverted. She is the cause, but she's telling Lord Ram, "You are the cause." "Lord Ram, what do you mean? Whatever is there that I should do, I will do it. If I offended my father in any way, I'll immediately make amends." Kaikai said, "Your father has made a promise to me, and he's afraid that you will not fulfill that promise. And therefore, he is in this condition. So you can free him from his fear by fulfilling his promise without hesitation." So Lord Ram said, "Alas, how sad it is that I have to hear words that cast doubt about my devotion to my father. Whatever he says, I will immediately tell. Without hesitation, please tell me, what are the promises?" Kaikai said, "He wants that Bharat be coronated as the prince and you go to the forest for 14 years. Lord Ram said, "Alas, till now I had thought that you were just my mother, just like my mother. And I thought you also treated me just like your own son. But today I understood that you never accepted me as your own son." Kaikai became very suspicious. What is he going to speak? Lord Ram said, "If you had really accepted me as your son, then for such an insignificant thing as a kingdom, you would not even have had to ask my father. At your own command, I would have gone to the forest immediately." He says, "Today itself, to fulfill the word of my father and to fulfill your desire, I will depart to the forest. Let Bharat become the prince." Dasharatha Maharaj was semi-conscious. And when he heard this, alas, he called out, Ram, and he fell on the coach and fainted. And Lord Ram went, massaged his forehead a little bit, applied some water, then took the blessings from his feet and he left. Then as he came out, he told Lakshman what had transpired. Lakshman was devastated. Then he proceeded to the palace of Kaushalya. And Kaushalya had been awake full night. She was praying to Lord Vishnu for auspiciousness to be showered on her beloved son Ram. And when Ram came in, oh Ram, today is such a wonderful day. Please sit on this throne and I will get some Vishnu Prasad for you. So Lord Ram humbly touched the throne with his hand and he said, oh my mother, you do not know of the great calamity that has befallen us. What I am going to tell you is going to cause you great grief, but please bear it with a steady heart. Seeing Ram's gravity, Kaushalya turned pale. Then Lord Ram told everything that had happened. And Kaushalya fell on the ground like a tree struck by lightning. She said, alas, he says, is my life meant only for suffering? Even after I was married for many, many years, I never had a child. And finally I got a child like you, who fulfilled and surpassed all my desires and expectations. Being separated from you, I cannot live. Already, even in your presence, I am neglected by the king in favor of a junior queen. With you exiled, I do not know what will happen. I'll be despised and rejected. Oh, Ram, you cannot go to the forest. He says. So Lord Ram folded his hand. He said, you know, I have to obey the duty of my instruction of my father. So then Kaikeyi spoke. Is the mother's order not as worshipable as that of the father? He says, being your mother, I order you that you should not go to the forest. So Lord Ram folded his hand and he said, you know, you have taught me always to obey my father. Will you today cause me to disobey my father? Please give me your blessing so that I can go to the forest to honor my father's word. So Kaikeyi started crying. She said, if you go to the forest, then I will come with you. I cannot live without you. So I cannot tolerate the taunts that Kaikeyi will cast on me. And even your father will reject me once you are gone. Please allow me to come with you. So Lord Ram folded his hands and he said, oh mother, the first duty of a woman is towards her husband. And after that, all the duties towards everyone else. In this time of crisis, you know and I know that our father has, against his will and at the cost of great pain to himself, decided to honor the word and does honor the Raghu dynasty in which he appears. At this time, he's in great pain and he needs you the most. If I leave and you also reject him and go away, he will not be able to maintain his life. Please stay here by his side. Throughout this whole pastime, we will see Lord Ram is constantly speaking in ways that will minimize the sufferings of others. He himself is suffering the most. It is he who has been betrayed. It is he who is being exiled. But he is talking about how everyone should behave to minimize the sufferings of others. So at that, Lakshman has been hearing all this. And Lakshman is almost like boiling with anger. And he said, oh brother, how can you accept this injustice? You know, the king may be our father, but when a person becomes infatuated by lust, he becomes blind. Being charmed by Kaikeyi, the king, he didn't even use the word father now. He was so angry. The king has become blinded and lost his sense of discrimination. How can anyone find any fault in you? You are the embodiment of virtue. For no fault of yours, if he is exiling you, it is a total injustice. And you should not accept it. you will be enthroned today. Not just as a prince regent, but as the king. And whoever stops you will be sent by my arrows to the abode of death. And even if the king comes in the way, I will send him to the abode of death. So Lord Ram said, your arrows will send me to the abode of death before they touch our father. So Lakshman immediately cooled down. And Lord Ram said, oh Lakshman, do you not remember how much Kaikeyi loved us? When I heard Kaikeyi speak those words, I immediately understood that it is the will of destiny. Destiny is ultimately supreme. And because destiny is supreme, we should accept it. If it had not been the will of destiny that I be exiled to the forest, there is no way that Kaikeyi could have spoken such words. Kaikeyi's love for us is like the flow of the Ganges which never stops. Lakshman retorted, I cannot understand how that Ganges has dried up in one night. So Lord Ram said that there are things in this world which are beyond human comprehension, and they should be accepted as the will of destiny. So Lakshman was a heroic, powerful warrior. He said, it is only cowards who accept injustice as the will of destiny and submit themselves. You know, a heroic person should fight against injustice and acquire his rights. Oh Ram, you are a Kshatriya. You do not deserve to submit to destiny like a coward. I will help you attain your rights. So Lord Ram replied, oh Lakshman, for me, more important than destiny is duty. And my duty right now is to obey my father. Therefore, I must go to the forest. So here, Lord Ram is telling that destiny is supreme. And Lakshman is telling, no, we should not accept injustice as destiny. So many times, the Vedic culture is misunderstood to be fatalistic. Fatalistic means, sab kuch Bhagwan ki ichcha hai. Jo ho raha hai, wo Bhagwan ki ichcha se ho raha hai. जो हुआ वो भगवान की इच्छा से हो, जो होने वाला है वो भगवान की इच्छा से होने वाला है. सो यू नो दिस अंडरस्टैंडिंग इज करेक्ट, बट इट इज पार्शियली करेक्ट. द भगवद गीता इज नॉट अबाउट सो मच अबाउट व्हाट इज हैपनिंग, बट द भगवद गीता टॉक्स मोर अबाउट हाउ वी आर रिस्पॉन्डिंग टू इट. सो देयर वी हैव ह्यूमन इनिशिएटिव एंड ह्यूमन फ्रीडम. सो द सेम लॉजिक इज यूज बाय वसुदेव व्हाइल ट्राइंग टू स्टॉप Kamsa from the heinous act of killing Dev. So Vasudev tells Kamsa, now if it is destined that you will be killed by the eighth son of Devaki, then how can you stop destiny? And when destiny is unstoppable, then why should you commit the heinous act, the triple heinous act of killing a woman who is your sister, and killing a woman who is your sister on her marriage day? You cannot avoid destiny. Now, when I read this for the first time, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, a question struck me immediately, that Vasudev is not thinking, oh, if it is the will of destiny for Devaki to be killed, then what can I do? Why should I argue with Kamsa? Why should I try to stop him? He's not thinking like that. So, but he's using destiny to discourage Kamsa. So what does it mean? The principle is that the Vedic culture is duty-centered, not destiny-centered. So for Vasudev, it is his duty to protect his wife. And he is doing his duty with all diligence. And he uses all kinds of philosophical, logical, psychological, all arguments. And when nothing works, he makes a promise to Kamsa that, I will give all the children. Why harm Devaki? So he doesn't fail in his duty at all in the name of destiny. Then why is he using destiny to discourage Kamsa? Because Kamsa is going away from his duty. He's going away from his duty. He is doing something irreligious to achieve something. So he's telling him, you know, if something is not destined, you will not get it. So therefore, don't do something irreligious. And you will not be able to avoid destiny also, and you will get further bad karma also. So we say that in the Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami says utsaha nishaya dhairyat. So a devotee should have utsaha for his service, and he should have dhairya for the result of the service. Dhairya, we should be enthusiastic for our service, we should be enthusiastic for doing our duty, and we should be patient for the result of the duty. So a devotee never talks about destiny to run away from his duty. No, a devotee does his duty very diligently, and after that, if the result doesn't come, he says this is the will of destiny. So Srila Prabhupada, we see, he preached so diligently in India, and there was no result. So he didn't become discouraged. He said, it is the will of destiny. So he accepted that, but he didn't stop his service to Krishna. He continued his duty of serving Krishna. And then went to America, he got fabulous success. And he did not think, I am the cause of the success. It is the will of Krishna, it is the mercy of Krishna. So Prabhupada never flinched in his duty. Always he was enthusiastic to serve Krishna, whatever be the result. So the Vedic culture is always duty-centered. And if we get the temptation to give up our duty, then we are reminded that the destiny is there. So don't give up the duty. So anyway, so here there was a conflict. So Lord Ram is saying destiny is supreme, and Lakshman is saying no, endeavor is important. So yes, both are important. The destiny is there, the endeavor is there. So Lord Ram says what we should focus on is our duty. So the example is given in the, I think, Vayu Purana, that when a farmer has to get crops, then at that time there is both endeavor and destiny. The endeavor is to plow the field, to sow the seeds, and the destiny is the rains. When both of them come together, then the crops grow. So among these two, the destiny is not in the control. But if he doesn't plow the field, even if the rains come, he will not get any crops. He will simply get weeds. So, therefore, what is in the hand of the farmer is to plow the field and sow the seeds. That he should do unfailingly. Now, what happens in modern society? People think of only one side of the story. That I have to endeavor. And if I endeavor, I will get the result. If I study, I will become a topper. If I work hard, I will become a millionaire. So, when people are educated with only one side of the story, that you know, you do your karma and you do your work and you will get the result, then when the result doesn't come, people get devastated. They start developing depression, then there's chronic depression, then there is inferiority complex, and there is even suicide which happens. So actually, failure is never a person. Failure is just an event in a person's life. And if we have proper philosophical knowledge that there is endeavor and there is destiny, and sometimes in spite of our best endeavors, the results may not come. So now, did Lord Ram actually want to go to the forest? Not necessarily. But when that is what the circumstances were demanding, he accepted it. Why? Because he saw that that is the path of duty for me. And then Lord Ram went to the palace of Sita and informed her. And Sita insisted that I want to come with you. And then that is also a very sweet and heartrending discussion. But we are focusing on the brothers. So then he came out of Sita's palace. And then Lakshman fell at the feet of Lord Ram. And he said, my dear brother, if you are going, then I will come with you. So Lord Ram said, no, you know, you are not exiled. You don't have to come. He says, no, I may not be exiled, but I must come with you. So it's described that when the sacrifice was performed to get sons for Dashrath, so the payasam, the fruit from the sacrifice that came out, Dashrath Maharaj divided it into two parts. So one part he gave to his senior queen Kaushalya, and second part he gave to Kaikeyi. And then Sumitra had nothing. So therefore, both of them gave parts of their offering to Sumitra. So now, although all four of them are Vishnu Tattva, they are Vasudeva Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Anuruddha, but they play different roles. So in the Ramayana, Lord Ram is like the Supreme Lord, and Bharat is like the Supreme Devotee. So Sumitra begot her two sons. One son became the servant of the Lord. The other son became the servant of the devotee. So that is the mood of the servant of servant. So if you see in the Ramayana, the focus doesn't seem to be too much on Sumitra. It's either on Kausalya or on Kaikeyi. But Sumitra is glorious because she begot two sons. She was the only queen who had two sons. Others had one. But both sons, she engaged in the service of the Lord and the Lord's devotee. So Lakshman said that as light is inseparable from the sun, I am inseparable from you. I must come with you. So Lord Ram said, Lord Ram didn't want anyone to be inconvenienced. He didn't want Sita to come also. But he saw that Sita was more aggrieved by the thought of separation from him than actual separation. And then he thought that let her be with me and I will take care of her. And then he said, actually, you know, our mother, Kaushalya, will be in a very sad condition and Kaikeyi may not treat her properly. So and Bharat will be devoted to Kaikeyi. And Shatrughna will not go against Bharat. Therefore, you have to stay in the kingdom so that you can take care of your and my mother's. So Lakshman was not a person who would take no for an answer. He said, oh, Bharat will not be partial. Bharat loves all the mothers. And even if there is some partiality that happens, there will always be messengers going between the forest and Ayodhya. If there is such news, immediately I will come and I will take care of things. But I must come with you. So Lord Ram again tried to dissuade Lakshman. But Lakshman was unswerving. Now in one sense, later on in the Mahabharata, in the Ramayana, you know, when Indrajit shoots that fatal arrow and Lakshman just falls like dead. There is practically no sign of life. And Lord Ram is heartbroken. Lord Ram comes. You know, there are very few occasions when Lord Ram cries. One occasion is when he goes into the forest and the first night when they are sleeping, there are tears in Lord Ram's eyes. And Sita and Lakshman ask, they know that it is a great sorrowful incident that happened, but what is the specific thing that is causing tears to Lord Ram? And Lord Ram says that my father is in so much agony and it is a duty of the son to relieve his father from suffering. But alas, not only am I not there by my side of my father to relieve him of his suffering, but I am the cause of my father's suffering. So now, this is such humility. I am the cause of my father's suffering. Actually, because of separation from me, my father is suffering. And I cannot go back to him to relieve him of the suffering. So that is one occasion when Lord Ram cries. Then when Sita is abducted and they're not able to find, at that time Lord Ram breaks down. And this is another time when Lord Ram sees that Lakshman is like dead. So Lord Ram says, he says, turns to Sugriva. He said that without Lakshman, there is no meaning of life for me. Even if I get back Sita, what is the meaning of life for me? I might get another wife like Sita, but I can never get another brother like Lakshman. For Sita to come with me to the forest was the call of duty. But for Lakshman, there was no need to come with me. Lakshman went beyond the call of duty. Alas, where can I get a brother like this? He told Sugriva, Sugriva, there is no need to fight. No, I will fast over here and give up my body. You can go back to Kishkindha and live happily in that kingdom. I cannot even go back to Ayodhya because Sumitra entrusted her son to me. What face will I show to her? That the son that she had entrusted to me, in front of my own eyes, I let him die. I did not do anything to protect him. Alas, there is no meaning to life. Sugriva was burning with rage when all this happened. And he said to the Vanaras, take Lakshman back to Kishkindha. And we have our physicians over there. Perhaps with the herbs and the physicians over there, they may be able to revive Lakshman. As far as I am concerned, all the Rakshasas will have to pay the price for causing this pain to Ram. He says, we will destroy not only Indrajit, not only Ravana, but we will destroy the whole Lanka and take revenge for this killing of Lakshmana. And all the Vanaras, who had become completely dejected on seeing Lord Ram's rejection, they immediately cheered and they became ready to fight. So at that time, Vibhishan came there and he said, "You know, let us see, is because Indrajit uses all mystical weapons and he may have created an illusion that the victim of his weapons is dead when the victim is actually not dead." And then they got the jadi booty and they revived Lakshman. But here we see Lord Ram's love. He says that there is no meaning of life for me. So this is the reciprocation of love. Lakshman said, "I cannot live without you, my dear brother." And Lord Ram said, "What is the use of life for me without Lakshman?" So then they all started toward the forest. So as they were supposed to go to the forest, before that, they went to the palace of Dashrath Maharaj. And Lord Ram offered obeisances. And he said, "My dear father, I have come to take your blessings so that I can go to the forest to fulfill your word." "Alas, alas, O Ram, I am powerless. I cannot stop this disaster from happening because I am bound by my words." And then Dashrath Maharaj spoke, "O Ram, I am bound, but you are free. You arise in revolt against me. Make me a prisoner and become the king. Kaikeyi will not be able to stop you. And because you have overpowered me, I will not be guilty of having not fulfilled my word." Kaikeyi was there only right next to him. And he was enraged. She was about to scream in anger. And Lord Ram said, "My dear father, I have no desire to live in this world bound by worldly profit, as a slave to the pleasures and the comforts of this world. I am only a servant of your instructions. And it will give me far greater pleasure to be living in the forest to fulfill your instruction than to live in the abode of Indra or Brahma in violation of your, in falsifying your word. So please give me your blessing so that I may go." So then Dashrath Maharaj said, "Yes, you can go, but not today. Go after a few days. You will not be able to enjoy the royal pleasures. So please stay here for a few days and enjoy the best of the pleasures." So Lord Ram said, "Even if I enjoy for 1 or 2 days, who will give me the pleasures afterwards? So if I'm not going to get them afterwards, why delay? Every day that I delay, now there will be doubt and aspersion cast about whether you will honor your word or not. Kaikeyi will doubt you. And I cannot tolerate that your integrity is being doubted. Please allow me to go with you." Dashrath Maharaj said, "Yes, you can go, but I will come with you. Not only I, all the ministers and all the soldiers and all the citizens and all the treasury will come with you. And we will make the forest into Ayodhya. And Ayodhya will become the forest. And let Kaikeyi rule the forest of Ayodhya." So Kaikeyi couldn't tolerate this. She started screaming. She said, "No, you had promised me the kingdom, not an empty wasteland. Nothing will go with Ram except his clothes. And there is no need for him to wear these royal clothes also. He is going as ascetic. Let him wear tree bark." And she already had tree bark ready. When Dashrath saw this, he said, "Oh, wicked lady, I am bound by my word. But today, I reject my connection with you. You are no longer my wife. Whatever affection I had for you, that dried up when you asked for the exile of Ram. But whatever official relationship remained, I end that too." Dashrath Maharaj fell on the ground, fainting. So later on, at the end of the war, when Lord Ram kills Ravana, at that time, all the devatas come in the sky. And at that time, Brahma comes, Indra comes, and then Brahma says, "No, Dashrath Maharaj is also there." So Lord Ram sees Dashrath Maharaj. And Dashrath Maharaj comes down and he embraces Ram and he says, "I am proud of you. Thank you for honoring my word. What benediction would you like to have? I want to grant some benediction." So what does Lord Ram ask? He says, "My dear father, when I was exiled, at that time, you rejected Kaikeyi as your wife. kindly retract that rejection and accept her back once again. So this is Lord Ram, completely non-envious, completely non-fault-finding. How can we not offer our life to such a Lord? Throughout the whole Ramayana, there's not one incident when Lord Ram finds fault with Kaikeyi. He says it's just the will of destiny. Even when Bharat is accusing Kaikeyi, Lord Ram specifically instructs Bharat that Kaikeyi is not to be blamed and do not treat her badly. So then Lord Ram decides to depart. And as Lord Ram goes out, he mounts the chariot of Sumantra. And by that time, Dashrath Maharaj comes back to consciousness. And the chariot has started moving. So Dashrath Maharaj starts running. He says, Ram, stop, stop. So Lord Ram is not ready to stop. Because he knows the longer he stops, the greater will be the agony for Dashrath Maharaj. So he just keeps moving. And then Dashrath Maharaj realizes that his son is bound by duty. So he tells, Sumantra, stop. I command you to stop. And then Lord Ram says, go faster. And now Sumantra is stalled.
You know, he's the minister
of the royal family. And the father is saying, stop. And the son is saying, go fast. So he doesn't know what to do.
So when we get two conflicting instructions, what should we do?
No, he asks for clarification. He says to Ram, you know, the king is telling me to stop. What should I do? So Lord Ram says, you know, the longer we stop, the more will be the pain for our father. Please go ahead. But he says, the king is telling me to stop. How can I disobey him? He says, what will I tell him when I come back? He says, you can tell him that you did not hear his call because there was so much sound in the other,
in the surrounding. And then
they start moving. And Dashrath Maharaj is running as fast as he could. He's blinded by grief. He's blinded by tears. And he's exhausted, both because of sleeplessness and also because of the emotional trauma. And he falls on the ground. And as he falls to the ground, a raw cry rises up among the citizens and among his queens. And the palace, the chariot moves away. Dashrath Maharaj rises and he watches that chariot till it disappears. It disappears. And those emotions are something similar to what the gopis experienced when Krishna disappeared in his chariot out of their sight. And then the citizens of Dwarka, of Ayodhya, decide that we will also go with. And they are going behind the chariot. And you know, there are young people, there are middle-aged people, there are elderly people. All of them are going behind Ram. And among them, there are some elderly Brahmins. And Lord Ram is telling, go faster. And these Brahmins are trying to run. And Lord Ram is very distressed, first of all, that while he is riding, the Brahmins are walking on foot. And on top of that, he says that they are having to run. So he says, stop this chariot. And I will walk with the Brahmins. And then they walk along the coast, and when they walk along to the banks of the river, and Lord Ram says, we'll sleep here tonight. Next morning he wakes up early, and he doesn't want the citizens to suffer the sentence that he is meant to suffer. And therefore at night he wakes and he tells Sumantra that you move the chariot round and round and round into the river and out of the river, and there are so many chariot marks. Ultimately, nobody is able to find which way they have gone. And then they cross the river and they go to the other side. And there they come to the kingdom of the Nishad king, Guha. Now, Guha has been the friend of Lord Ram. They had met earlier in Vishwamitra's ashram. So, and Guha sees Lord Ram is coming. He's overjoyed. But then he sees Ram with an ascetic robes. And he wonders what has happened. And then he asks Sumantra. Sumantra explains, Lord Ram is not ready to cast any aspersions on anyone. Sumantra explains what has happened. And so Guha says that, my dear Lord, you have been exiled from Ayodhya, but my kingdom is yours. I will enthrone you as the king, and you are outside of Ayodhya, so you are fulfilling your sentence and you can live for 14 years here itself. So Lord Ram smiles. He says, thank you, but I cannot evade the sentence that my father has given. He says, I have been told to live in a forest, so I cannot live in your kingdom. So please help me so that I can go to the forest. So then he stays overnight over there. So Guha offers in the best of beds. Lord Ram says, no, what is the use of these beds for me? I will sleep on the floor. And then the next morning, Guha arranges for the boatmen. And they have to cross another river. So at that time, the boatman, he's a kevat, boatman, that is very sweet pastime. So the boatman says, "My dear Lord, I have to wash your feet." So Lord Ram says, "Why?" He says, "I have heard that just the dust of your feet, when it touched the stone became a woman. It is Ahalya, you know. So I already have a wife. If my boat becomes another woman, my wife will not tolerate it." So Lord Ram says, "No need, nothing will happen to your boat. No, I cannot trust your word. I have to wash your feet." And then washing it, then becomes small bowl. He brings a huge bucket. And then he washes the Lord's feet. And then he not only drinks the water, he takes the water and he says, "Every day in whatever food I will eat, I'll put this water. So that I am drinking the not only the water that has washed your feet, but all the food that I'll eat will be sanctified by your dust." And then he moves. Lord Ram crosses it, the river, and he goes into the forest. Then they come to Bharadwaj Muni's ashram. Bharadwaj Muni, by his mystic vision, has already come to know what has happened. And he says, "You can stay in my forest. In my hermitage, it is in the forest." So Lord Ram says that, you know, this is too close to Ayodhya. That is the external reason he gives. But actually he feels that if we are here, then people will come and see us and that will disrupt the sanctity and the peacefulness of this ashram. So he says, "Please tell me some other place." And then they go to Chitrakoot. Which this is, there's a mountain not very far from here. It's very beautiful. And actually, out of the 14 years, a major part, between 12 to 13 years, Lord Ram spends in Chitrakoot. So Chitrakoot is like the Vrindavan of Ramlila. Because Vrindavan, there is sweetness and intimacy. So there is no royal opulence. Lord Ram and Sita, both of them are together. Just like Radha Krishna were together in a pastoral forest setting in Vrindavan. And in fact, Lord Ram spends more time in Chitrakoot than what Lord Krishna spent in Vrindavan. Lord Krishna spent only 10 years of his life. Lord Ram spends more time and a very sweet, intimate pastimes over there. But before that, when we go backwards, so here Dashrath Maharaj passes away in separation from Lord Ram. And Vishwamitra becomes the temporary, not Vishwamitra, Vishishta becomes the temporary ruler of Ayodhya. And he says, this virtuous king, he had 4 sons. And it does not behoove that such a glorious king will not be given his final rites by one of his sons. So therefore, preserve his body and call Bharat back immediately. But don't tell Bharat that his father has passed away, because such a difficult news, he should have his loved ones around him to give him support. So see, Vashishta is detached. But detachment doesn't make him insensitive. He's not just throwing around. He is himself detached. He's a sage. But he's so sensitive that Bharat should be told this news when he's surrounded by his loved ones who can support him at that time. And in Bharat Maharaj, it takes a long time for him to come back, because there's a lot of procession which is there with him. He wants to come quickly, but he is given those gifts by the king. And so he has to come slowly. And when he comes, he finds Ayodhya has become like a ghost town. No, there's no fire coming from the chimneys. There are no sacrificial fires being lit in the temples. There is no worship going on. Even the shopkeepers are not opening their shops. Practically no walking on the streets. There are no birds chirping in the sky. The animals are lying just dejected. And then he goes, his apprehension is increasing more and more. Finally, he comes to the palace of Kaikeyi, his mother. And he's apprehensive. His mother embraces him. "Oh Bharat, welcome. We have been waiting for you for so long. How was your stay?" she asks. And he replies to all her courtesies and he says, "Why has my father not come to greet me till now? Whenever I would go out, he would be there to welcome me back. Where is my father?" And Kaikeyi says, "Your father has attained the destination that is inevitable for all beings in this world." Bharat is shocked. "Alas, alas." He collapses on the ground. Then he says, "Oh, surely my father must have remembered me before he passed away. What last instructions did he give for me? See, now also, it's not, you know, I lost my father. How can I serve my father? What last instructions did he give for me?" Oh, Ram was so fortunate that he was there with my father when he departed. Please, oh mother, call Ram. I would like to know from Ram what were the last words that my father spoke. So Kaikeyi has become completely hard-hearted. Kaikeyi says that I will tell you what were the last words he spoke. He was speaking, Ram, Ram, Ram. Those who see you coming back from the forest will be very fortunate. I will not be so fortunate. So Lakshman is completely confused. He says, Bharat is completely confused. He says, what do you mean? Was Ram not there? And then Kaikeyi tells the whole story. He says, there was a conspiracy in your absence to deprive you of your rightful kingdom. And therefore, I averted that conspiracy by having Ram exiled to the forest for 14 years and having you enthroned as the king. And unable to tolerate separation from Ram, Dashrath departed to the next world. Now the kingdom awaits you, O Bharat. He spoke as if with great joy. And Bharat was devastated. He said, how could you ever have imagined that I would envy the kingdom that is meant for my brother? How can I ever accept the kingdom? Oh, mother, what have you done? You have sent my brother to the forest and you have sent my father to the next world. And all this for my sake? Now is the real trauma of Bharat. You know, many times we face false accusations. So Bharat, you know, goes through that same situation again and again with everyone. He has had nothing to do with the conspiracy. But everybody thinks that he is involved. And how he deals with that is so exemplary. So then, but he says, what possessed you? How could you ever have thought that I will accept the kingdom? This can never happen. He said, I will go to the forest and get Ram back. In the Kaikeyi's palace only he makes that resolve. And you know, till now, Kaikeyi has created a bubble of an illusory Bharat who is pleased by what she is doing. And although the whole world is displeased, no, everybody is chastising her, reviling her. Now finally when Ram, Lakshman, Sita are going to the forest, at that time Ram, Lakshman, they wear the tree bark. And they know how to wear it because they have been Vishwamitra's hermitage and they have seen the hermits wearing it. But Sita has absolutely no idea how to wear it. And Sita is just looking at it and wondering what to do with this tree bark. And seeing that, even Vashishtha breaks down. And Vashishtha, he starts chastising Kaikeyi. He says, you know, you have broken the heart of your husband. You have cast the whole kingdom in an ocean of lamentation. You have stripped Ram of his kingdom and of his royal dress. And now you are stripping the tender bodied Sita of her royal dress and making her wear tree bark. Does your heart not break, O wicked lady? Have you become stone-hearted? Kaikeyi doesn't speak one word. Now, how is Kaikeyi able to tolerate all this criticism? Because she thinks, I am doing all this for Bharat. And Bharat is pleased by all this. But when Bharat rejects her, when Bharat chastises her, she's completely confused, broken down. She tells, oh mother, how could such a thought even have entered your mind that I will envy Ram? And she says, actually, Mantra told me all this. And then Bharat realizes, actually Mantra has been the nurse of Kaikeyi right from her childhood. You know, she was like a second mother for Kaikeyi. And when Kaikeyi got married and came from Kaikeyi Desh to Ayodhya, so at that time Mantra also came with her. And Bharat knew that, you know, Mantra was not of such a noble character. Actually, Mantra was hunchbacked. And because of being hunchbacked, you know, she was always the object of jokes for everyone else. And she had grown resentful of this joking that would happen at her expense. And so when she came to Ayodhya, somehow Kaikeyi developed some affection for her. So Kaikeyi was the favorite king of Dashrath, and Mantarao the favorite maid servant of Kaikeyi. So because she was the favorite maid servant of the favorite queen of the king, she had developed a position of prestige in the kingdom. And she did not want to lose that prestige. And that's why she poisoned Kaikeyi. So Bharat now understood. Now everything made sense to him. Still it didn't make sense, but at least he could understand how his mother could have done such a thing. And then he was called to the assembly. And then Vishwamashishta told him that you had to perform the last rites. The last rites were performed. And then when they were returning, Shatrughna and Bharat were coming. At that time, Bharat was caught up with some of the ministers he was talking, and Shatrughna went inside. And there he saw Mantara. And Mantara was dressed in silken, costly robes. She was wearing jewels and ornaments. You know, Kaikeyi had told, Kaikeyi was so captivated by Mantara's speech that she had told, "Oh Mantara, generally hunchback women are crooked, but you are a noble exception." And although you are hunchbacked and ordinary people may consider you ugly, I consider your hunchback position to be like a lotus that is bending down because of the sweet breeze. And he said, if your plan works out and if Bharat becomes the king, then I will decorate your hunchback with a jewel necklace. So Mantara was wearing all this. And when Shatrughna saw this, you know, Shatrughna got so angry. He just, as soon as Mantara saw Shatrughna, she started running away. But you know, all of Ayodhya was against her. So the gatekeeper caught her. And he brought her. Here is the wicked one who is the root of all the suffering that is happening in Ayodhya. Catch her and punish her. So at that time, Shatrughna caught her and started shaking her violently. And she started screaming. She had only one shelter. She said, "Kaikeyi, Kaikeyi!" She started screaming. And Kaikeyi came running out. And Shatrughna, stop! And Shatrughna glared at her with such anger that she also shrank back. And then, at that moment, Bharat came in. And when Bharat came there, at that time, Kaikeyi ran to Bharat. "Bharat, please stop Shatrughna!" So at that time, Bharat said, stone likewise. He says, "Shatrughna, stop." He said, "I understand how you feel. And I feel like doing the same what you are doing, not just with Mantara, but even with Kaikeyi." Kaikeyi shrank back. He says, "If they had not been women, I would have given the death punishment to them. But because they are women, we cannot punish them. And more than that, if we cause any harm to them, Ram will never forgive us. Ram will never forgive us. And therefore, let her go." Shatrughna hears this. Shatrughna lets her go. So here, we see a very important principle in operation. You know, when things go wrong in our life, there are natural emotions that come out. So now, Bharat and Shatrughna's anger is entirely justified. But how are they able to control that anger? By remembering Ram. By remembering Ram and thinking that this reaction will displease Ram. Therefore, I should not do this. Similarly, now for all of us, we have to have a connection with our spiritual master, with some senior devotee whom we want to please. And it's natural that in this world, the lower emotions will come out. Sometimes we may get lusty. Sometimes somebody may behave in such a way that we just feel, I want to teach this person a lesson. We get angry. But if we think this will displease my spiritual master, then we can control it. You know, if we just artificially try to control the lower emotions, that cannot go on for a long time. There has to be a higher emotion that conquers the lower emotion. The higher emotion is wanting to please the spiritual master and not displease the spiritual master. The path of impersonalism is the path of nullifying all emotions. The path of bhakti is not about nullifying emotions. It is about intensifying emotions. intensifying higher emotions, nobler emotions. In fact, in the Lalita Madhava, it is described. Lalita Madhava is a book written by Rupa Goswami. So there, Purnamasi is asking Nandimukhi, you know, after Krishna has departed from Vrindavan, what is the condition of Radharani? So Nandimukhi says, Radharani's condition is lamentable. He says, it's utterly lamentable. He says, you know, if somebody drinks the halal poison, the halal poison was what had come out of the churning of the milk ocean. He said, that was such a poison that it was far away just coming out. And the devatas and asuras, who were all powerful warriors, they started swooning just by the vapors coming from there. And he says, that halal poison, even if it is consumed 100 times, the burning and the pain that will happen, that burning and pain is insignificant as compared to the fire of lamentation that is burning Radharani in separation from Krishna. Life would have left her long ago. Life would have left her body long ago. But some inconceivable power seems to maintain the life. And what is that inconceivable power? That inconceivable power is the promise of Krishna that I will return. The only reason Radharani was living in separation from Krishna was that if Krishna comes back to Vrindavan and if I am not there to serve him, Krishna will feel so sad. And I don't want Krishna to suffer. Therefore, let me live so that in the future I can serve Krishna. So, although it's an emotion of suffering, in that there is intensification of remembrance of Krishna. And because there is an intensification of the remembrance of Krishna, there is the greatest ecstasy. Similarly, when there is joy, it is described in the Jiva Goswami described in the Satsandarbhas, that actually whatever happiness is there in the heavenly nectar, you know, if you multiply that by the lifespan of Brahma, the lifespan of Brahma is trillions of years. It says, so the happiness of the heavenly nectar is far, far greater than the worldly happiness. Greater than the happiness of the heavenly nectar is the Brahmananda. You see, if you, the happiness of impersonal liberation, you multiply that happiness of impersonal liberation by the lifespan of Brahma, which is trillions and trillions of years. And that cannot approach even a drop of the ocean of happiness that a devotee experiences. So bhakti is all about intense emotions. It is not about giving up emotions. So, because there is such an intense love for Lord Ram in the heart of Bharat, and although there is intense anger towards Kaikeyi, the love for Ram conquers over the anger towards Kaikeyi. Similarly, in this world, we will face problems, we will face injustices. And in one sense, natural to explode. We may have to do the needful to deal with them, but exploding is rarely helps to make things better. So it is our love for our spiritual master that enables us to conquer that lower emotion. And then, then Vasishtha called Bharat to the assembly and told him that now that Dashrath has departed, it is your responsibility to become the king. So Bharat folded his hands and he asked Vasishtha, is this your instruction, O Gurudev? It is not my instruction, but it is the natural befitting thing to do. So Bharat turned to the whole assembly and he said, I can no more take the kingdom than a donkey can carry the king the way the elephant can carry. This kingdom is and forever belongs to Ram. And he said, what was done was without my knowledge and without my sanction. So, I am planning to go to the forest to get Ram back. Does this have your sanction, O Gurudev? So Vasishtha says, everybody erupted in joy. And he said, not only does this have our sanction, we will all come with you. And we will all go to the forest. And then they made a, because so many citizens wanted to come, and Bharat thought that the more the citizens, the better the chance of getting Ram back. Because he's the younger brother, and Ram will easily reject his request. But if Vasishtha comes along, the chances are better. If all the ministers come along, if all the citizens come along, then the chances are much better. So he arranged for a road to be built, and then they started off. Then when Guha saw this huge army coming, he thought, oh, this is royal conspiracy happening. Now Bharat has sent Ram to the forest, and defenseless Ram he's planning to kill now. So he said, all our soldiers, let us be ready. There is no chance that we can fight with the army of Ayodhya. But the only way that Bharat will reach Ram is over our dead bodies. And then they were ready to, with upraised arms, to fight. But then, because he was so sincere in his desire to serve the Lord inspired him from within the heart. He said, let me go and check what is the intention of Bharat. And then he went. And then Sumantra saw him. Actually, Sumantra had crossed the river. And when he came to Guha's palace, at Guha's kingdom, at that time Lord Ram told him, please go back now. So Sumantra said, I cannot go back. I will stay with you. And I will serve you in this exile. I cannot tolerate the thought of you living in the forest. It was at that time that Lord Ram took on the ascetic he was there when he, it was at that place that Lord Ram slept on the floor, and Guha brought the best of foods, but Lord Ram said, I will eat simple fare of the forest. So Sumantra could not tolerate all that. So he said, I will come with you. So Lord Ram said, no, you are just like our father. In fact, you are my father's only counsel at this time of crisis. You are the most trusted minister of the father. So he needs you there. And more than that, as long as you do not go and give the news, Kaikeyi will still be suspicious whether I have gone to the forest or not. Therefore, you must go. Actually, Sumantra's role is something like Akrura's. Just as Akrura had to take Krishna away from Vrindavan, Sumantra had to take Ram away from Ayodhya. But Akrura's role was even worse. Sumantra's role was even worse because Akrura never had to go back to Vrindavan to see the devastation that happened over there. But Sumantra had to go. And wherever he would go, you know, everybody would see the empty chariot. Even when Dasharatha Maharaj saw the chariot coming, he was so happy. Oh, Ram has come back! Ram has come back! And then he looked and he saw the chariot was empty. And he collapsed. So Sumantra again came with Bharat this time to show him the way which Lord Ram had taken. And Sumantra told, this Guha is very close to Lord Ram. And then Guha ascertained the intentions of Bharat, and then he gave him the way. And then they came to the hermitage of Bharadwaj. And Vasishtha and Bharat together went to meet Bharadwaj. And Vasishtha and Bharadwaj embraced each other, and Bharat offered his obeisances. And then Bharadwaj turned to him and he said, O Prince, I trust that you are not coming with any evil motives against Ram. When Bharat heard this, you know, he had to face this accusation. Actually, before that, when Kaikeyi had done this whole thing, so Bharat was heartbroken. He didn't know where to go. You know, his father had departed from the world, and his mother had turned to do something which was worse than his worst nightmares. He had no shelter. So he went to Kausalya's palace. And as he was hoping that he will get shelter over here, and he was also fearing that Kausalya may misunderstand me. And as he went into Kausalya's palace, Kausalya saw Bharat and he said, Oh Bharat, now that your mother has brought the kingdom for you, enjoy the kingdom. But I am your citizen and I have one request. You know, your mother has sent my son to the forest. Now that you are the king, I request you, please send me to the forest also. Now my husband is not there, my son is not there. Let me go to the forest. And then you and your mother can enjoy this kingdom. And when Bharat heard this, he fell at the feet of Kausalya and he said, Oh mother, I had nothing to do this. Please believe me. Bharat felt that nobody would believe him. First of all, he couldn't believe what had happened. But after it all had happened, how could anyone believe that he was innocent? He fell at the feet of Kausalya and told, You know my love for Ram. How could I have allowed this? In fact, I am going to the forest to get Ram back. And Kausalya heard this. She became delighted. She embraced Bharat. She said, I will also come. And then, when everybody was going, at that time, Kaikeyi went to Sumitra.
Now, actually, everybody was against her. She didn't know whom to approach.
So Kaikeyi went to Sumitra and she told, please tell your son that, please request Bharat that let me also come to the forest. So Bharat still did not trust Kaikeyi. Then Kaikeyi told through Sumitra that I will request Ram to come back. Then Bharat agreed. And they were all going to the forest. So then Bharadwaj Rishi told him that, you know, I trust you have not come with any evil motives. No, this was again and again that arrow of suspicion was falling, piercing the heart of Bharat. Bharat fell at the feet of Bharadwaj Rishi and he said, you know, if you also ascribe such motives to me, then indeed I am doomed. Please, O Sir, I had nothing to do with this. So Bharadwaj Muni picked up Bharat and he fondled his head and he said, I knew that you had nothing to do with this. But I only wanted to intensify your desire to meet Ram and intensify your resolve to get him back. Because when you meet him, it will not be easy to get him back. So we see how Bharat responded is very exemplary. He did not get angry. He said, you are supposed to be a sage and you don't have the knowledge of how pure my heart is. You know, sometimes what happens, if other devotees misunderstand us, that is not so painful. But if some senior devotee whom we love and who we think he loves us, he misunderstands us, that is intolerably painful. And that time we start feeling that probably this devotee is not as advanced as I was thinking he is. That's why he's misunderstanding. But you know, it's Krishna's plan if somebody is misunderstanding us like that. So Bharat, how does he respond? He just sincerely pours out his heart. He doesn't blame Bharadwaj. He says, if you misunderstand me, then surely I am doomed. And then the sincerity of his heart comes out and that sincerity evaporates all suspicion. And then after that, finally they come to the Chitrakoot Parvat. And then they are searching. Then I described how Lord Ram Lakshman misunderstands, but Lord Ram resolves the whole thing. And then Bharat comes ahead. And Ram and Bharat are about to embrace, and Bharat sees how Ram is wearing ascetic robes. And actually, when Bharat hears that Ram is wearing ascetic robes, he decides to wear ascetic robes also. And he has resolved that if Ram doesn't come back, I will also stay in the forest with him. So that's why he's wearing ascetic robes. And they embrace, and then Ram asks him, you know, why are you wearing ascetic robes? And then he sees in the distance, because Bharat has come running ahead, but the whole royal assembly is coming. And he sees Dashrath Maharaj, the royal elephant, Shatrunjay. And then he sees that there is nobody on the elephant. Lord Ram's heart stops beating. And he asks, how is it that the royal elephant has come without the king, without our father? And then Bharat breaks the news to Lord Ram. In separation from you, our father has departed. Actually, when Dashrath Maharaj departs, so at that time, Vasishtha gives a condolence speech. And he says, we have heard throughout history of Matru Prem, of how the mother loves the child and cannot bear separation. A cow cannot bear separation from the calf. But Dashrath Maharaj has set a new example in the history of the world of Pitru Prem. How the father could not tolerate separation from his son and left this world. Dashrath Maharaj's life was exemplary and even his death was exemplary. So Lord Ram hears the news, he breaks down completely. He falls into tears and then Ram and Lakshman go to the sacred river nearby and they offer water to the father. And then Bharat gradually brings up the real purpose of his visit. He says, now that our father has departed from this world, as per the tradition of primogeniture, you as the eldest son should become the king. Therefore, we have all come here to not just call you back to the kingdom, but to coronate you as the king here itself. We have brought all the coronation paraphernalia. So Lord Ram replies, actually this dialogue between Bharat and Ram is said to be the conflict between love and duty. Bharat is the embodiment of love, the pinnacle of love. And Lord Ram is the pinnacle of duty. And there is this conflict, loving conflict between the two of them. So Bharat says that, you know, you please take the kingdom because you are the oldest son. So Lord Ram says, our father desired that you take the kingdom. That was his word and we should follow that. So Bharat has anticipated all the arguments. He has prepared his answers beforehand. Throughout while coming, he's meditating and praying that Ram agree to come. So he says, oh my dear brother, oh Ram, you know, I am a small boy, I am incompetent. I cannot handle the kingdom. You must come back and preserve the legacy of our father and our ancestors. So Lord Ram replies, you know, you are competent, O Bharat, and you have Shatrughna, you have Vasishtha, and you have Sumantra and all the ministers. Under their guidance, you will be able to administer nicely. So then he says, Kaikeyi has come there. And Kaikeyi says that, you know, it was not the will of Dashrath Maharaj that you go to the forest. It was my will. And he acceded to it. So I take back those words. Please come back to the kingdom now. And Lord Ram says, the instruction that was given by my father, only my father has the power to recant that. Now that he has given the instruction, I must stay in the forest. So then Bharat says, my father's instruction was that, you know, one son will stay in the forest and one son will stay in the kingdom. So Bharat grabs his opportunity. All right. He says, and I will stay in the forest and you go back. So Lord Ram says, oh Bharat, how can you be so irresponsible? You know, everybody's karma and dharma is individual. If we arbitrarily start transferring one's karma to another, there will be chaos in the whole world. No, it is my duty to live in the forest and it is your duty to live in the kingdom. And the discussion goes on back and forth. And finally, Bharat in despair says, O Ram, if you do not go back to the kingdom and become the king, I will sit here and fast to death. And Ram says, oh Bharat, please don't compel me like this. Please let me do my duty to my father and you also do your duty. And the whole discussion is deadlocked. And finally, both of them turn to Vasishtha Muni. And they say, oh Gurudev, you please resolve it. And then Vasishtha says that, seeing the steadfastness in duty of Ram and seeing the unalloyed love of Bharat, even I am confused. I don't know what to do. And then Bharat sits on the Kusha grass. He says, I will fast to death. I will not go back. And then finally, Lord Ram, he says, oh Bharat, your love won, my duty lost. He says, you have come here to give me the kingdom, I accept it. Everybody starts cheering. He says, your love cannot be defeated and it must win. But at the same time, I cannot tolerate our father's word being falsified. So you have come to give me the kingdom, I accept the kingdom. And I entrust it to you for 14 years.
Now Bharat cannot say anything. Bharat had just been elated. But when Lord Ram says this, he has to accept.
Then Bharat says that, if I am going to rule on your behalf, then let your Padukas be the rulers. Let them sit on the throne. I cannot sit on the throne. Today if one brother gives his brother the Padukas, the other brother will beat him with it.
So
then Bharat actually puts the Padukas on his own head and he carries them back to the forest. So this is the sweetness of the love between Bharat and Ram. And then when they finally come back, Bharat has told Lord Ram that actually I will not live for one day more than 14 years. If you come back one day more than 14 years late, then you will find my dead body. So then Sita is abducted and Sita is rescued and brought back. And when they are coming back, so at that time, Lord Ram, actually Bharat goes back to the kingdom, but Bharat stays outside in Nandigram. He lives the life of an ascetic. And his wife Mandavi comes to be there with him. He said, I will serve you. He said, no. I will live as ascetic. And I will not just live the way Ram lived. I will be, because of me, both Ram and Lakshman are suffering. So I will do the austerity that both Ram and Lakshman are doing. So Ram is living in the forest and Lakshman is living without his wife. So Bharat lives without both, without the kingdom and without his wife there in the forest. And then when Lord Ram is going back, at that time he had told Bharadwaj Rishi that I will come to your ashram and take your blessings while going, and I'll take your blessing while coming back also to the kingdom. So they are coming by Pushpak and they land at Bharadwaj Rishi's ashram. And there Lord Ram tells Hanuman, no, in this world, when one starts living amidst comfort and luxury, one gets attached to it. So Bharat has been the king for 14 years. If he has become attached, then I do not want to cause him any pain. So go and give him the news that I am returning. And if you see even the slightest displeasure on his face, then let me know. I will stay in the forest. So Hanuman goes and he sees the emaciated body of Bharat. And then he offers, it gives him the news that Ram is just coming. I am a messenger from Ram. And when Bharat hears this, you know, his body is like a wilted lotus. His face is like a dried up flower, and suddenly it blossoms. He says, Ram is coming. Is it really true? Ram is coming. He said, yes, he's just coming. I was with him a few minutes ago. And I flew and came back. And he is so overjoyed. He says, oh, messenger, you have given me such a joyous message. He says, I will give you a village. I will give you a chariot. I will give you a crown. I will give you a maiden.
No, Hanuman says, I don't want any of this. And then, just as Hanuman sees the spontaneous joy that Bharat is experiencing, tears start coming from his eyes. Now, when one devotee sees the devotion of another, he feels great joy. He feels Bharat's devotion is no lesser than mine for Ram. Lord Ram need have no suspicion. And then he goes back and informs Lord Ram, and then Lord Ram comes. And as the Pushpak Mahan is descending, Bharat Maharaj actually starts doing the arti, welcoming the Lord right from there itself. And then there's the joyous reunion. So actually, Hanuman represents the spiritual master. And the Lord has been exiled from our heart. You know, it has been exiled from our heart. And the Lord wants to return back. But the spiritual master assesses, how much do we want the Lord back in our heart? Or do we want the worldly things still? If those worldly things still occupy our heart, then the Lord cannot enter. So when the spiritual master gives instructions, those instructions, he's actually giving the Lord entrance into our heart. And to the extent we wholeheartedly accept those instructions, the spiritual master tells us, chant attentively. So actually, if we chant attentively, that means we want the Lord to come in our heart. But if we are chanting distracted, that means the Lord is coming, but we have more important things to do. The Lord says, I will not intrude. If you are attached, then you stay there and I will stay away. That's why the spiritual master gives instructions. If we take them wholeheartedly into our heart and apply them, then the Lord will re-manifest himself in our heart. So this is the beauty of the Ramayana, that, you know, whatever emotions the devotees experience with Lord Ram, we can experience with our spiritual master. Because the spiritual master is the representative of Krishna in this material world. And if we try to serve Krishna wholeheartedly through the instructions of the spiritual master, we can also experience those divine emotions. We see especially in the life of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, they were ready to do anything and everything. They went to Africa, they went even to Pakistan. For what purpose? Because they wanted to please Srila Prabhupada. So that relationship is the most important relationship for us. We may or may not have regular association with the spiritual master, but we know his instructions. And if we are following those instructions, we should know that he is pleased. And to the extent that he is pleased, Krishna is entering into our heart. And when we wholeheartedly accept the instructions of the spiritual master, then Krishna occupies our whole heart. And Krishna enthrones himself in our heart. And then we become forever happy. Then all our emotions become spiritualized. And then every emotion, whether it be joy or sorrow, it actually brings us the greatest joy. And then what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu promises us, Anandam Budhivardhanam Pratipadam Purnamrita Swadhanam, that will become a reality for us.
So I'll summarize. I started by talking about how there is emotional chaos. So there's a lot more, but we don't have time now. There's emotional chaos. People are being emotionally hijacked. And what Lord Ram tells us, emotions are not bad, but emotions should be elevating and not degrading. We discussed about people mistake vasana to be bhavana. Lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. These are like ticklings, external superficial emotions. And they are not our real life. So the real emotions are in relationship with the Lord. So first, we connect our material emotions with Krishna. Whatever material desires we have, we try to get them fulfilled through God. Beyond that, the scriptures tell us that, now get rid of all the material emotions. But beyond that, the scriptures tell us that, now you develop your spiritual emotions. So by hearing about the selfless love of Lakshman for Ram and the selfless reciprocation of Ram toward Lakshman, of the intense love between Dashrath Maharaj and Ram and Bharat, you know, we get a glimpse of the intense and completely fulfilling love that is there in the reciprocation between the Lord and His devotees. And we can also experience that love in relationship with our spiritual master. So thank you very much. Shri Ramachandra Bhagwan ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Chanditai Gaur Premanande. So if any of you have any questions, we have a few minutes. If any of you have to leave, you can leave. We don't want to delay you. But if any of you have any questions, you can wait. Okay. Okay, one question. Yes, Prabhu. Just 1 minute. We'll come back. Yes, Prabhuji. Oh, Sita being exiled. Yes, yes. That is one of the... That seems to portray Lord Ram as very hard-hearted. Just some one citizen, he is saying that Sita is unchaste and Lord Ram gives her up. So actually, it seems very improper, but there is a very deep understanding to this. Lord Ram comes here to exhibit life as an ideal person, as an ideal human being. And as human beings, we have many roles to play. Like Lord Ram said, you know, for a woman, her first duty is towards her husband, then towards her children, like that. So there's the role of a wife and also role of a mother. So we have many roles to play. And when we have different roles to play, sometimes those roles conflict. And the duties demanded by those roles are in conflict. And then that leads to what is called an ethical crisis. There are two choices, both are moral. But which is a higher morality, which is a lower morality? So, with respect to Lord Ram, now he is the ideal husband and he is the ideal king. So, when this aspersion was cast on Sita, now as the ideal husband, he has to protect his wife. But as the ideal king, he has to exhibit the noblest qualities. And you know, the king lives amidst great opulence. But still the king is expected to exhibit detachment. You know, the king lives in the greatest opulence, far beyond what is imaginable also for common people. But when the sages come, the king bows down to them. And then the ordinary people understand, oh, that means the sages are so respectable, they are more respectable than even the king. The king is respecting them. Similarly, the king, no matter how much wealthy he is, he's supposed to take vanaprastha. When people see that, he's supposed to retire at a particular age. That's what Dashrath Maharaj wanted to do. Then people understand, then I should also retire. If he has so much wealth and still he thinks there is something higher to achieve in life, then why should I give up, why have my attachment to the wealth? So let me give it up. So now, the king has very beautiful queens, but he is supposed to live in all that opulence as a service to the society, as a service to the saints, service to the Lord. So now, if the queen... If there is some aspersion to the character of the queen, and if the king continues to stay with her, that means, that will mean to the common citizens that the king is attached to the queen. And if the king is attached to the queen, that gives justification for all the citizens to be attached to their wives. And if they are all attached, then there can be no spiritual advancement. So therefore, Lord Ram had to demonstrate detachment for the service of his citizens. So therefore, there was a conflict. There was the duty as a husband and there was a duty as a king. And how did Lord Ram resolve it? Some people say Lord Ram banished Sita. Actually, that is completely incorrect. Because there was no banishment. If you see, when Lord Ram himself was banished, at that time he had to go deep into the forest where there was no shelter. He had to live amidst Rakshasas and animals. But what did Lord Ram do to Sita? No, he just told him, Lakshmana, to take her to the ashram of Valmiki. And Valmiki's ashram was within the kingdom of Lord Ram. So basically, he did not abandon her alone in the distant jungle. It was within her kingdom, within his own kingdom, and under the care of the venerable sage Valmiki. So that was not at all banishing. So Lord Ram indirectly protected Sita by putting her under the care of Valmiki. So he did fulfill his duty even as a husband of protecting Sita, but he exhibited the detachment that was necessary for a king. So that's how we actually fulfill that role. Now in modern society, people just don't understand the concept of detachment. So for them to understand it, it's very difficult. But the principle is there that if the king is ready to sacrifice his own wife for the sake of setting a good example, then that sends a very powerful message to the citizens. So that is the principle and the purpose. So two things. There was an ethical crisis for Lord Ram, and he considered his duty to his king, to be his kingdom, to be superior to his duty to his wife. Therefore, giving that as a priority, he sent Sita out of his palace. But still he did not give up his duty to his wife. He arranged for her protection indirectly by placing her in Valmiki's ashram. Okay?
Okay.
Last question, Prabhuji, yes, please.
Sir, today the greatest crisis in the world is global terrorism. Can these emotions can be taken care of today with reference to today's lecture?
You know, the terrorists substitute the God.
Today is 9/11. Today
is, yeah, 9/11. Okay. Yeah. So the terrorists substitute the God who loves all his children with a God who loves those whom they love and a God who hates those whom they hate. So, their God is not the real God at all. Their God is just a God who is a product of their own imagination. So, their God is just a product of their own imagination for serving their own nefarious purposes. And ultimately, you see, even these terrorists, you know, are they happy doing what they're doing? No, they're not happy. Their hearts are they fulfilled? No. They are also suspicious, they are fearful, they are hateful. So they are causing so much disaster. Actually, this is ultimately the result of violence, you know, of anger, frustrated anger that is expressing itself in ugly ways. So ultimately, yes, there may be having some injustice against them. But if we understand the philosophy, we understand the law of karma, in my sense, whatever injustice is happening is because of our own past karma. And by doing worse karma, we don't solve that problem. So actually the last slide which was there, which I didn't couldn't get to, but this is related to that. See, emotions and thoughts, these are our two faculties. There is the head and the heart. So emotions have to be directed and regulated by thoughts. And thoughts have to be animated, enlivened by emotions. So in their case, there are no thoughts. There is no philosophy to direct their thoughts. Emotions. And that's why those emotions go wild. But in Krishna consciousness, we have emotions and we have thoughts. So we have systematic philosophy and we also have devotional activities. And then by this, there is a holistic development of the person. The head develops and the heart develops. And that brings us true happiness. Okay? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So we would just like to thank His Grace Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, right, for cheating us. The title of the seminar is what? Nectar Drops from the Ramayana. But Chaitanya Charan Prabhu has cheated us by taking us deep down into the ocean of the nectar of devotion, nectar of Ramayana. So, every month we are conducting these seminars for the brahmacharis of Juhu and for the congregation. Right? Last month we had Radhisham Prabhu come here. Right? How many of you are there for Rajasham Prabhu's? Almost all of you, yeah. Okay, very nice. And also, we'll be having next month, right? There's an announcement for the next month, right? 99% true, right? 8th, 9th, 10th of October, we'll be having His Holiness Bhakti Charu Swami come here and give us a seminar on Sharanagati, right? The title will be Sharanagati, Surrender. Right? So, we'd like to once again thank him by a loud Hari Bol. Hari Bol! Hari Bol! So there's a small token of appreciation, right, to ensure that Chaitanya Charan Prabhu keeps coming back to Radha Rasviri Juhu. We have a small but powerful token of appreciation, the sweet samosas Mahaprasad of Radha Rasviri Juhu. Right. This is a book because he himself is a book, unlimited book, but we would like to add to the collection. So thank you very much, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, for your association. Today also Prabhuji gave a very wonderful Bhagavatam class right in the morning also. So we are very, very thankful again for his association, and we wish and pray that he keeps coming back to Juhu. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.